Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show is coming up right next.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. Talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail. Hey everybody, welcome. It's so great to have all of you tune us in and turn us on. It's so great to be connecting with all of you. And I hope everybody had a great 4th. How are you, Mr. Benny?
Doing pretty good. That's my imitation of my firework display. I'm glad you got it.
So I moved to a new place. So I'm out of the old hood. I'm into the new hood, right?
Yeah.
And so this is a different hood, right?
Okay.
I'm into a different hood. So in the old place, if you got like one firecracker, it was like, okay, that was the main event. Now, in the new place, which borderlines kind of the Mill Creek, like it's in the vortex of like the Mill Creek, Everett, Bothell vortex. Actually, it's actually called the vortex, actually in the Weather Channel calls that, right?
They similar to the vortex. Center of the universe. Yes, correct. Yeah.
Of course, everywhere I go. Right. Everywhere I go, there I am. But OMG. I mean, I haven't heard that many fireworks till I was living in the Bronx growing up as a kid.
Because then
we used to just blow up the manholes and stuff like
very
that.
Very similar.
Right?
Like, is this what
that was like
consistently? Is that about right?
I think that's Seattle. Oh. No, this was like boom. Like,
oh,
boom.
Yeah. I don't have that.
Well, and the reason I'm bringing it up is because I think it represents the energy people are feeling.
Sure.
Right? You know, it's kind of this like, yeah, not supposed to do the fireworks because we're in the middle of a drought. But you know what? We think we're going to do them anyway because we think we're going to wait till after dark because then it's not so droughty.
Yeah. They can't catch us all, Pat, right? They can't catch us all. Could that be another way of thinking it? Or I don't want to put that out there. That's
Did you get any fireworks where you were or no?
We actually went to a neighborhood that had them. The house that I was at, it was a barbecue. They actually did not personally. They did last year. And they're like, we're taking a break from, you know, purchases and so forth. We'll let the rest of the neighborhood do it. And I'm on board with that.
Woo! I'll tell you. It reminded me of like Katy Perry, 4th of July.
Oh, yeah.
That 4th of July.
I like those fireworks.
But you know what it brings up? Here's what it brings up. It's really interesting because I'm talking to Lee about this today. It brings up this fantasy, this idea. It brings up, shall I say, imagination. It taps in to this incredible world. When you have an event like fireworks, right? Albeit the 4th of July, like July 4th, like what's that in the United States? That's like a day. And so when you have it, it represents something really interesting. But what it also represents is, and, you know, for me, Lee and I have one thing in common, Carl Jung. We probably have a bunch of other things in common, but, you know, like Carl Jung, right? I like grew up for years saying, would you be my father? So then, of course, that's some kind of psychological Freudian thing that we're not going to get into today. But what is it about looking at Dr. Carl Jung and Jungian depth psychology and thinking about the world we live in today? And what is it that has prepared Lee Adams and, you know, all of us for what we're about to step into? So today we're going to look at what Lee has done so far. And there's much more that Lee has done in A Visionary Guide to Lucid Dreaming. Why is this important? Why is working with dream states so important in the world we live in today? We're going to dig deep into that. But when we're in those states, what if we have symbols? What if there are things that just keep showing up for us? I mean, what in this world we're living in for many of us, even if this giant firework bomb goes off and you wake up, what are you seeing? What are you hearing? You know, are you starting to see things that could help us, shape us, create the conscious reality of the world we live in today? You know, this is the body of work beyond this that Lee is doing. And today, by the way, fabulous book, everybody. We have two copies, Benny. Benny, get ready. Two copies of A Visionary Guide to Lucid Dreaming, Methods for Working with Deep Dream State by my fabulous guest, my author, Lee Adams, today. Yeah, I only wish that I could have gone back and attempted to study Jungian psychology. That's what he's doing. But what is it about his pathway that is allowing him to step forward and say to all of us, there is a state that could help us in the world we live in today? Lee, it's great to have you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Patty. It was it's great to be on the show, and thanks for the great introduction too.
You know, I just love having these conversations, because underneath an author and underneath a book like this, and by the way, I've read the book, and so I may point to some things in the book, but I'm not going to go like, oh, on page 10 when you're talking about the route to beyond. That quote that you had, I'm not going to do that to you. I might, though. Benny's like, yes, you'll do that. But one of the things that I really want to talk about, and I'm going to jump ahead in the book, is this repetitive nature of what we're seeing in symbols. And I don't know how to call it anything else. Maybe you can help me. I'm even struck by what I'm looking at in your background. I'm really struck by repetitive symbols, right? You know, people look at my background and they say, really, dude, twinkle lights? Like, what is that? Twinkle lights? Is that Kuan Yin? Is that like a Buddha back there? And what's that blue thing? Do you ever take the blue thing out of there? No, I cannot take the blue thing out of there, because the blue thing and the representation of what it means to me, I have no idea. So here's my question. What was it like becoming you and realizing that we need to understand more now than ever what is going on in our dreams in order for us to live in the world we're living in today?
Well, that's a great question. What makes me me? And I've always been interested in dreams, and in dreams, symbols are constantly apparent, right? And so I think it's natural for me to say, what do these, you know, symbols mean? What's the story here? What's trying to be told to me? Because like you brought up a good point, is that oftentimes these symbols continually repeat themselves in dreams too. And so we're challenged with that, you know, especially if it's sometimes a more aggressive, nightmarish type experience, you know, or even the happy dreams, you know, like if they're repeating, we kind of bring our attention to that and say, what's going on here? So for me, you know, that's exactly what happened to me. I mean, I've had dream experiences that were very detailed, in depth, very story driven, and had these complex messages inside them. And I wanted to understand what they were. And in our culture today, we don't generally look at symbols in the way that maybe ancient cultures did, and we don't really think of them as being important. And so in a way, it's like learning a new language. You know, you're going to, say, Japan, and you don't know the language or anything like that, and you know, you're sitting down trying to order your meal, and you have symbols in front of you, letters, you know, and things like that. And you also have the culture in front of you. And it's hard to communicate if you don't know the language, what you're trying to get, you know. The person trying to take your order in this restaurant is, you know, they want to know what you're trying to say. So they're actively trying to communicate to you as well. But, you know, in that instance, it's challenging. So, you know, and for me, I'm still actively learning the language itself. And it's not something that's easy, because it's contrary to what we typically think of as language in our waking life, because our languages deal with our senses, right? Like our words and things like that. So a symbol, you know, it, most of the time when we think of symbol, we think of just an image, right?
Yeah.
But that's not necessarily what I'm talking about. Like in dreams, you have images, but you also have auditory, you know, sensations, and you also have emotional responses to those images. And all those things together is what I really call a symbol. It's more of like a total effect on you versus just the image itself. So, but yeah, it's a complex thing. So, throughout my life, I had lucid dreams, and in a lucid dream state, it allows an individual to communicate with the dream environment in a different way than is typical. Normally, you know, it's a one-way conversation in a way. You have an experience, you wake up, and then you're like, oh, okay, I had a dream, and let me try to understand what that dream is. Where lucid dreaming comes into play is it allows you, the conscious you, to come into a dream state and then ask questions in a way that typically you would do in waking reality.
Yeah.
And in doing so, the dream symbols can communicate back to you, and they can have a dialogue with you that is typically not there. Yeah. So in doing so, it allows you to understand symbols in a different way, to start learning that language, to kind of build a bridge in between. So, yeah, that's where lucid dream kind of comes into play in the symbolism.
Yeah. And I love what you're just talking about here for a minute, because let's get down to like the nitty gritty.
Sure.
Wasn't that like a nitty gritty dirt band? Was that like, oh my God, am I dating myself?
Yeah, you're dating yourself there.
Oh boy, did we just do that? But in the book, I love the way you introduced this conversation about consciousness, because, and I want to get right to this conversation we're going to have with dreams. You say, you know, one of the things, you know, we talk about with especially transcendental meditation is, first of all, to be conscious, you have to have three things. One, it must be able to observe. It must have observed itself. It must experience a process of observation. So basically, every aspect that you can possibly imagine in 100 million times times 15 of observation, this is in three bullet points. You either are it, watching it, or becoming it.
Yeah, all at the same time. So,
all at the same time.
So the interesting part about that is, and the main point that I was trying to really get to people, which probably is overlooked.
You did a good job. I got it.
Okay.
If I get it, you did a pretty good job. It takes me a few.
Yeah. Is the realization that in order to have consciousness, three things are required at the same time. So it's not like one piece evolved separately from the other and then it just happened to come together. It's actually three requirements at all times to exist at the same time for consciousness to exist. So in this sense, it's kind of a way to break people out of this cell they're in, you know, and say, wow, what is consciousness? Because nothing that we know of actually requires that. Essentially, you know, in order to have those three things, if they're accurate, you know, exist at the same time, they always had to exist. And so in that sense, consciousness isn't something, the big consciousness, right? Not your memories of yourself and what you ate this morning and things like that. That's not exactly what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the thing that actually is you, not just your physical body, let's say, always had to exist throughout all time. So essentially, it follows the same rule as matter, right? Matter can't be created or destroyed, or energy can't be created or destroyed. It can be just transformed. So it's essentially equating it to that. It requires three things at all times. And if any of those pieces are missing, then it would fall apart. It wouldn't exist. So it's a very complicated thing.
Yeah.
Not something that I think that we can just recreate, you know.
What? Yeah. Okay, end of the interview. We're done. We're like, okay, he's gone. No. Because in a sense, though, when I'm reading your book, there are a couple of things I really want to point to, and really a stream that really makes this important to my first question about here's what I'm finding, Lee. You know, I've been doing this a while. I'm not quite sure if you know how long Benny and I have been together. He's been my producer for 18 years when wasn't the Dr. Pat show. And I am a student. I've always been a student. From the minute I got behind the microphone, I didn't even know what I don't know. And that's the way I show up to this. Now, there are some things in this world I do know. But this venue for me and speaking with you is an honor and a privilege, because you're bringing a body of work I believe, into the world at the perfect time. I don't think you sat down and said, well, wait a minute, lucid dreaming, methods for working with the deep dream state. I think I will do this to get us ready for COVID-19 and the aftermath of that.
No, definitely.
Well, you
not.
Might have.
I definitely didn't sense that coming, no.
But here's a cool thing that I want to bring up. And it has to do with awareness, but it also has to do with connecting the awareness part of the book with the interpretation part of the book. Mm-hmm. I want your opinion about this.
Sure.
I grew up as a kid with a wild imagination. Mm-hmm. And I did. I actually did grow up in the Bronx. So I wasn't joking before the show about that. That's really true. And we did do crazy things on 4th of July. I mean, my sisters blew up the bathrooms in the school. They have now passed on, so I can say that about them because nobody's going to hunt them down. But here's the thing that I realized. Now, I got sent to Dr. Jacoby for this. Maybe if you were around, that wouldn't have happened. But I was this kid that before I went to bed at night, I would carve out the characters that I were going to have in my dream, who they were going to be. If I went to see the giant behemoth at the movie theater one day and I came back home and I decided I needed the giant behemoth so I wouldn't get jumped on the way to school one day, I would create this pre-dream storyboard before I went to bed. And I literally, that would play out at night. At one point, I had an entire arsenal of characters. And I was a great comic book kid, great comic book fan. I did the whole comic book thing. But some people say that's not dreaming. You know, when you pre-script your dream, that's something else. And I think in the world we're living in today, especially now what we know about the body of intention, the law of attraction, we are pre-scripting our dream states all the time if we call in intentions. And I wanted to get your sense of this because if we can't create a sense of something so that we become more aware without ayahuasca, I mean, you could do ayahuasca. I love the Peruvians for that. But that is a hallucinogenic, which some people say does put you in a lucid dream state. Well, what are your thoughts, especially around the children that are growing up now, Lee? I mean, the kids that are growing up now, you can sit down with a 5 and 6 year old and you will be talking to them like they are 20, 21. They just have a sense of the world. What is it that happens when we decide we're going to attempt to preset our dream for the night?
Yeah, well, there's a lot to unpack there.
Go ahead.
For one, I know.
Hey, you got 10 minutes before the break. Go for it.
Yeah. One thing I'd say is that you're definitely dreaming. You're not dreaming when you preset your dreams, I guess. And I would say that you have a great relationship with your subconscious, which isn't a young term. Young doesn't really ever really talk about a subconscious. He talks about the unconscious.
I know he
subconscious
does.
Is more a Freudian thing.
I think he's a closeted case on that, but we can save that for the great conversation.
But I definitely support the subconscious priming thing. So I mean, what you're talking about is essentially magic, right? In the sense that you're priming your subconscious in order to have an experience. And we constantly do that all the time. Even unknowingly or knowingly. So I don't think it's strange that you can do that, you know, or strange that you experience that because we experience it every single night. So, I mean, people often dream about things that they experience during the day, and that gives a little bit of a reason for the scientific community to kind of discredit dreams as being just random things that happen throughout your day and then you're dreaming that. What I would say is that even though you're priming your subconscious to have these dream characters and these images appear in your dreams, I would say that there's a possibility, I don't know you and I don't know your dreams, but that your dreams are that the dialogue and the experience inside the dream isn't necessarily the things that you desire to experience. So
exactly,
they will surprise you.
You do know me, Benny. He's like, I don't know you, but then like he does know me.
Yeah.
The reason I'm bringing this up for a minute is, and let me get all like Jungian psychology on you for a moment.
Sure.
I do another show on Thursdays called The Psychic and the Doc. And
okay, and
I'm not the psychic. Mark Anthony is. I get to be the doc. And one of the few times actually that I'm actually using this degree. But here's the thing I'm discovering. And this is, I'm so excited to have you on the show. And I got to tell you, I just love our folks at Inner Traditions. And I think Ashley, and Linda brought you on. But I was so excited once I read your book. When I got to the chapter, Let's Get Lucid, I thought, he's writing this for me.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. But you're writing it for a lot of people. And can I just go here for a minute and then get back to ask you about this?
Oh, yeah, sure.
You could have written a book about anything. You really could have, you know, given what you're studying, given your background. But lucid dreaming, I'm going to make a statement and you could just agree or not agree. Just, you don't have to agree with me on this show.
Sure.
Okay, let's just be clear. But lucid dreaming for me, and based on what I know about it, based on practicing, and certainly after reading your book, I'm really trying to practice more. It is to me this portal to a future I know that I want. Maybe my quantum partner is already existing in it, according to my friend Jean Houston. But lucid dreaming to me is this gateway, not to make life harder, but it's almost like an investigatory process where we get to find the clues. I want to ask you two parts to the question. One before the break, how close am I to your definition? And please correct the part that's not.
Yeah, well,
you can say it. Don't worry. I'm not going to take it personally.
Lucid dreaming is part of that. I mean, I keep it pretty simple in the sense that lucid dreaming means having awareness in a dream. So any varying degree of awareness could be considered lucid. So you're in a dream and you say, oh, I'm dreaming. One thing that, you know, attract me to lucid dreaming, and I think, and the reason why I wrote a book about it and why it's so important in the world today, is because there's so many mechanisms in our waking reality to essentially control our perception of reality, you know, to direct our attention in some one way or another and kind of frame this experience that we're having in waking reality in such a way that it's that way. It's the way that the mass chooses, right?
Yeah.
And we can find this in religion. We can find this in politics. We can find it pretty much everywhere in our existence. What lucid dreaming is essentially a tool that is ingrained in each of us to essentially have freedom of thought, and allows us to explore our consciousness and our unconscious in such a way that is the way that we choose. So it's essentially one of the only things that we have, I think, that allow us to explore freely and without a bunch of people and politicians and so on telling us exactly what we should think, right? So as a tool, it's very liberating. Yeah. And you know, each individual's experience is very different than another person, and intentionally, because we're vastly different people. We vastly have different experiences, and we're in different places in our life than other people. So the dreams are tailored using images throughout our waking life to convey messages through symbols that are important to us in some fashion. Doesn't necessarily mean that it's directing us to be a better person, or say, you know, what we define as better person, right? But people would say it's directed by a higher self, right? Like the capital S, which is a Jungian term, self, yeah. Higher self. So that's what Jung would say, is it's directing towards us
yeah.
in that way. And not just Jung, but occultists and many religious practitioners throughout the world, yep. Would say the exact same thing. So it's not something that is just Jung, spewing
it's
off
not,
his stuff.
No, believe me, I know it's not him, but I also know Maslow really took a beating when he put self-actualization on the top of his pyramid.
Right. Yeah.
But fast forward to where we are. Yeah. Fast forward to where we are today and say, bingo, there we go with that. But one of the things I do want to ask you, and I want to talk with you about it when we come back. First of all, I love the way you give us different levels to participate. That's brilliant. I think it's one of the first books I've seen on lucid dreaming, on dreaming, where you say you can enter this by doing this and this will take care of this, or you can go more advanced and, by the way, give up caffeine. Did you see me drink my black coffee right there?
Oh, so I'm not coffee in that right group. Now. So
yeah, I'm not in that group. That's not me. But then the other thing that we're talking about is extending techniques. So you really take us in this book on a pathway that allows us to participate at the beginning, at the basic level, or then move forward. I do want to ask you this question, because I've always baffled myself with this and Dr. Carl. Clearly, if you've ever seen pictures of Dr. Carl sculpting, that was his pastime. Mm. He was a sculptor. I often wondered about that process of creating art and the way that he looked at life. And, the thing I want to talk to you about is, if this is not about becoming a, quote, better person, then is it in fact about finding our right pathway, and not right as righteous, but right pathway for each of us? Because honestly, I never thought I would get out of being homeless and selling hot dogs on a street corner. I thought that was my pathway. I just love that job. It's the best job I ever had. What is it about this process that could help us find the next door, reach for the doorknob, and have the courage to open it? That's what I want to talk with you about when we come back from break.
Okay.
You can think about that. You'll have 3 minutes. The clock starts now. Benny, let's take a short break. We've got 2 copies of the book to give away. I think we have one left. 1-800-930-2819. We'll be right back. My very special guest, Lee Adams, will tell you how to get a copy of the book and how to find out about A Visionary Guide to Lucid Dreaming. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Trish Laub from A Cup of Comfort, where we talk about Care Hero topics that nobody wants to talk about. Here's your Care Hero tip of the day. During all Care Hero journeys, the need to keep track of a lot of information arises, some of it critical. Possibly the greatest challenge Care Heroes face is the gathering and organizing of information. Just as every trade has a power tool, whether an electric drill or a laptop, my family's Care Hero power tool was the 3-ring binder. We generated a mini library of labeled 3-ring binders, one for each category of information, complemented with additional spiral notebooks used to detail medical appointments and episodes. This unfussy and convenient system of binders helped my family stay organized and able to deliver the dignified care and end of life my parents desired. Tune into my show to learn more. See you on the 2nd and 4th Tuesday of the month at 12 Pacific here on Transformation Talk Radio. Feel free to reach out to me at info@trishlaub.com.
The truth is funny. Shift happens with Colette Marie Steffen is excited to welcome Karen Benton as a monthly guest host. Tune in on the 3rd Wednesday of each month at 8 a.m. Pacific time to regain confidence and trust in your capacity to create change in your life, your health, your family, and your well-being. Karen Benton is a mother, nurse practitioner, certified body talk practitioner, Franklin Method instructor, and owner of Limitless Living LLC. For more information about Karen, visit KarenBenton.com.
The vibration of change, that magical place where life shifts from struggle to ease, from stagnation to forward movement, from old ways of being to new ways of becoming. If you're like I am, it can be rather elusive to get there, but when you are in it, you feel it down to your very core, don't you? And it can positively affect everything in your life, from your relationships to your health and well-being, from your career path to your abundance, from the quality of that inner connection to the fullness of your self-expression. On the Christine Epchurch Show, we explore ways to get into that vibration of change with experts in the fields of consciousness, psychology, spirituality, health, healing, and science. Join me, Christine Upchurch, every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on KKNW AM 1150 and Transformation Talk Radio, and learn new ways to step into your vibration of change.
Hey, Benny.
Don't worry.
Benny, that is older than like the one that I did with the little nitty gritty dirt band. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
That's like my sister's generation right there. Woo. That's a good, that's the Everly Brothers.
Yes, it is.
Did I surprise you that I knew that?
No. Totally. I didn't mean it like that, but
not to be confused with Hall & Oates.
Way different band.
Different, but you know, they kind of looked a little bit the same. Like, mm-hmm. I think like maybe Hall & Oates maybe kind of did like a copycat on the Everly Brothers, but that's another show.
Possible.
That's the power up show. How many Tina Turners are there in the world? Raise your hand. Welcome back, everyone. I want to say that I'm really great to have Lee Adams join me here today, the author of A Visionary Guide to Lucid Dreaming, Methods for Working with the Deep Dream State. Before we talk about how lucid dreaming actually helps us realize our life's pathway, or makes us more aware of our life's pathway, or at least gives us like a clue, take the right, not the left. How do people find out about you, Lee? How do they get a copy of the book?
Well, they can go to luciddreambook.com. That takes everybody to my website. But they can also search on Amazon or through Inner Traditions and find my book through there. So, okay. And they can contact me directly through my website as well.
Yeah.
Which is tailleaders.com. But the luciddreambook.com takes you to the same website. I just made it easier because my site's name is a little strange, I'd say. So.
No, I think it's great that you did that. And what I want to say to everybody, if you want to start working with your dream and want to coach today, you can also go to this website, and there, right there, you'll see dream coaching. Or right next to Get the Book, there's Great Dream Coaching, and there's a bunch of other things, especially the blog. Take a look at some of the blogs on here. Really interesting. And so you can go down to the Lucid Dreaming Challenges. That's a good one too. But there's everything you want to know about Lee on here. If you're thinking, I need some more help. I need some help with my dream. Take a look at what some people are saying about their dreams, and then go ahead and contact Lee, schedule your appointment. So one of the things, Lee, I'm fascinated by is, you know, and I said this earlier, I don't know what I don't know about a lot of things, but I'm so willing to discover. And what I've discovered about myself, if I use the tools that are available to me, life is a dream. Life is a dream. Now, that's an old song, Benny. Life is a dream. And when I think about that, I've often had to think about, as I'm reading your book, how some things have come to me. And that's my question to you. You know, I've shared with the listeners that one day, driving back from the studio where Benny's sitting right now, I hit the I-90 and my dashboard lit up. And I could see the entire vision on what the network was that we were to build, including how to build it. And from that point on, I literally had to pull over. And from that point on, though, the image kept coming back and coming back and coming back. Can you talk about how the pathway from dreaming, symbols, and understanding them to help us or guide us through our lives?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's very individual again. So, I mean, you brought up an interesting experience about being awake and having an experience where you could say symbols of an experience, a symbolic experience, kind of communicated to you something that you wanted to do, you know, or mm-hmm. needed to do. I'd say my book is actually came to me that way. So it wasn't something that I really was intending to do, but I had this strong need inside myself to put something out there in a way that people could learn from, you know, in about dreams. And I didn't necessarily think that I was the person to say that. I actually felt that I was the person that would probably be most unlikely to say that. I have a bad history of like grammar and spelling and all that and language. Yeah. So, but you know, kind of like the story of Moses, I think in a way, I kind of felt like that, and I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. So I put it down, and then, you know, and when the book was published, things in waking reality seem to align with that. You know, like lucid dreams have been in the recent news, as well as film and TV. So it's kind of perfect timing in a way. So, but dreams, you know, they present us with these narratives, these stories symbolically. And in my book, actually, the last half of it is essentially showing the individuals who read it about creating their own personal myth through the book. And most people think of myth, they think of fantasy, fake story, right, about you know, they're superheroes or ancient Greeks doing all these things, right? But what they fail to realize is that these stories are not about the Greek gods. They're actually about themselves. And the people that wrote those stories were trying to convey that message to them, that these stories are actually about each individual going through these processes. They're normal processes that happen to us. And so I attribute most of my book to the hero's journey, which is Joseph Campbell's work. He essentially saw these myths throughout history and symbols, and he identified a pattern that takes place, and he really went into and described this pattern. So I kind of attribute dream experiences to the hero journey. Joseph Campbell was more talking about waking experiences, which would be kind of relatable to your experience, you know, like where you interacted with something and it would convey a message to you of something that you felt like you should do. And so I kind of turned it around and put it into a dream state, because really, I don't think of dreams being a higher priority than waking reality. I think that you can interact through rituals and, you know, like ritualistic type of practices and things like that to work with symbols. But you can also do that in dream state. I'm an introvert, so I look internally for meaning. And so dreams are something that I align with, but an extrovert would probably project into reality their psychological workings and then work with that way. So what, you know, it's a hard thing to really describe, but essentially how our brains work is that everything that we experience is internal, right? We take information and then we generate a picture of those things inside our mind. And that's how we relate to reality. The things that we experience in reality aren't necessarily the things that they are. They're representative. The things that we see in our mind and experience in our mind are actually representative of the things in reality. They're not the things of the reality. So in that sense, it's how we see reality versus what reality is. And so in that sense, we can interact with reality in such a way that is very personal, has personal meaning to it, and also has a individual myth to it. So dreams obviously are the same way, in the sense that we're kind of removed from external experiences, so much so that most of the images are generated internally. And in that sense, it's kind of more of a more clear picture of a mythic type experience, you know, where it's symbolic. But what I'm getting to is that essentially all things are symbolic, and in the sense that they are representing things. The symbols themselves are representing things that are much more complex and not the things that we're experiencing ourselves. Yeah. So,
well, you know, it's an interesting play too, because it's a great way to understand it. I was talking to somebody over the weekend and we were talking about, they had heard my tagline on the show, what would you do if you knew you could not fail? And I've talked about this a lot recently, and you know, the question really begs, you know, how do we live our lives? So we lived in that. And then I got a quote on my desk this morning. I've not failed. I've just found 10,000 things that do not work. And right?
Right.
And the reason I'm asking you this question is because in my dreams, and I think in people's dreams, sometimes we get messages about things that will work and things that wouldn't, but we get to play them out. Mm-hmm. And we get to play them out in various ways. The thing that I want to talk with you about is this idea of decoding and being able to understand the dream. Because a lot of times, you know this, Sometimes we'll have a dream and a lucid dream and a dark thing shows up, right? And now I've joked about this on the show last week, but I will never watch Nightmare on Elm Street ever again. I won't watch. I watched number one. And I went through a phase where I watched this and it didn't faze me. But recently, you know, I was flipping the channels and there it was. And I had a moment where I got like, oh, like that. And the question is, what does Freddy Krueger represent to me?
Exactly.
Right. I mean, that is it like Nightmare on Elm Street? It's a movie.
Right.
It's a movie. But why in today, why would a Freddy Krueger movie and Nightmare on Elm Street, why would that give me like a little bit of a thing? Like, oopsie.
Well, that's very individual. You know, I can watch Nightmare on Elm Street and completely see it in a different aspect than you do. I tend to see movies now symbolically. So what does that, what do these characters represent to me? You know, like the person that generated the story, right? The script writers and the director, they projected into the film their psychology, even if they're unknowingly doing it. So Freddy Krueger isn't just a scary dude, you know, running around cutting people up in their dreams. He represents something very, you know, very real, because we relate to it. So because we have an emotional response to it, it means that something inside of us is actually relatable to that character in the sense that it's real, just not the character that we see on the screen. So it's symbolic, right?
Yep.
And that's what I'm getting to is symbols, is that they represent things. And even super complex things that we really can't understand. So, but Freddy Krueger to me, you know, I definitely have had my share of nightmares involving Freddy Krueger, and Freddy Krueger has transformed over time to maybe represent more closely to, the source of what, where I feel that emotional, impact come from, but, any, you know, changing images and things like that. So a lot of people experience Freddy Krueger like beings in, or visitors, we call them, in sleep paralysis and things like that. And I've definitely experienced that. So, and Rudolf Steiner, if you know his work, he wrote about a guardian in the threshold, things like that. So,
and you talk about this in your book, and that's really, you know, what I wanted to bring up. You talk about guides and guardians of the dream. And, you know, the deal with me that I don't think I said to you is before I went to bed, I assigned an army of guardians for me. But talk about guardians and guides, because I don't know that people really have a sense of guardians and guides in the lucid dreaming perspective.
Well, I'll be honest. I don't really have a good definition of them either. I'm coming to more and more is that these are so individual, right? It's so complex that it requires an experience, it requires a relationship with these things in order to actually know who they are or to get a sense of what they are, right? It's like sitting down and having a cup of coffee with a friend. You know, you can have a 10-minute conversation with somebody that you've never met before, like, kind of the radio does, or you can have like a couple hour, you know, conversation with somebody, you really get to know them, right? And what we're doing in dreams is we're kind of taking the content of dreams into waking reality, and we're trying to dissect it and put it into little boxes and say, oh, this is what that is and this is what it's not. And I always go back to like the conversation with a friend. It would be very improper and also reductionist of me to say, oh, my friend is this or that, you know, and put a, you know, be like, oh, they said this word so many times, so therefore this word represents them, kind of thing, or whatever, you know. Obviously my friend is constantly changing, so anytime that I visit this person, you know, over the years, they've changed in such ways that it surprises me, right? And and they're so dynamic. So the same thing goes for dream content. My main goal is not so much to tell people what these things are and what these things aren't. It's instead to allow them to have an experience that is inside themselves, right? Like they have the tools and ability to do it. They just need to kind of practice some of those experiences so they can engage with those things themselves and really learn for themselves what they are and aren't. Through my experiences, which are in the book, talking about guardians, things like that, they've been protectors. You know, they've guided me in order to look at different parts of myself that I never really thought I could look at or I should look at, and really challenge me in those ways. And they challenge you. They've challenged me through fear, a lot of fear. Also, you know, overcoming that fear and kind of at least working with it and to understand what that fear is. And even, you know, the scary ones, the ones that I felt were the worst, are actually the biggest teachers of mine, if I really step back and look at it, you know. And oftentimes, you know, it's kind of, it's symbolically expressed in like the story of Job, where you encounter something and it's so terrifying and scary and destructive that you kind of just push it away and you never encounter it again because it's so traumatic. But what happens in that story is essentially the individual Job has an experience and then goes back and challenges it again. And so when you do that, the dream symbols, the characters kind of understand what you're doing. You know, they're like, oh, okay. I challenged you and you kind of came back at me and said, so what, you know, then the real content comes out, you know, because that was the initial phase to see if you would actually have the gumption to come back and actually face the things that you're terrified of, you know, like the Freddy Krueger. And that's what the characters do in Freddy Krueger, too, you know, is they one of the characters is no longer terrified, you know, of Freddy Krueger and is like, hey, you know, you do whatever
you want. Well, she's the heroine.
Right.
Yeah, I think they brought her back for Nightmare Part 2. I don't remember, but yeah, she's the heroine, right?
Yeah, and the theme is over and over again in Nightmare on Elm Street. Like every movie, it's like
one is the same.
The same exact story where the person is faced with Freddy Krueger and they're like, I'm not going to have it anymore. And then Freddy Krueger's like, oh my gosh, this person isn't doing what I expected them to do. Yep. I've lost my power. And then they have nothing anymore. So we can see this theme in so many different movies, right? And when the power is taken away, the person just falls apart. It's the same thing with like Lord of the Rings, where you know, the ring is destroyed and the power just falls out, you know, they disintegrate into nothing. So, but before, you know, they're the super powerful being that can't be destroyed and everyone's terrified of it, you know, but something so simple as a ring, you know, is where their power lays. So,
and you know, this is really part of what you're talking about too. And I can't remember where it is, but you know, we're talking about hidden gateways too. We're talking about the mind. We're talking about, you don't say this in the book, but I'm always fascinated by how little of our brain we're actually using. And, you know, whether or not I believe that the rest of the brain will get used in the complete esoteric realm. You know, that's like my dream for that. But the symbolism in the world we're living in today and how much of it we hang on to and seeing symbols is so much a part of our life and so much a part of your work and book. Mm-hmm. And yet at sometimes we don't really know that we're seeing a symbol. Let me give you an example. Anytime we find a penny, and this is kind of like, if we find a penny, if Linda and I find a penny in the weirdest places, there's the penny. Why would we be looking down? There is the penny and it's heads up. Symbolically, we both look at each other and we say, that's Joan, Linda's mom, who passed. So, and then we always follow it up by, I wonder what Joan's trying to tell us. Now, that's a strange thing because, you know, in a sense, we have this penny as a symbol that we relate to Joan, somebody that is of an incredible mentorship and wisdom for Linda and I. And then we ask, I wonder what Joan's trying to tell us. So, you know, when we find these symbols and we become aware of them, the next thing is, what do I do with them, Lee?
Well, the depth psychologists don't necessarily agree with me on this one, but I tend to think that this is a rational conclusion to what symbols actually are. And in the sense that symbols are everything. Everything you possibly could ever experience is symbolically, it's symbolically representing something, right? Yeah. So, you know, I see you. This obviously is not who you really are, you know, like a screen. You're not my monitor. So I'm symbolically representing something that's infinitely deep, right? You would take a lifetime to know, probably multiple lifetimes to know, because you're constantly changing. And so it's symbolic, right? But say yesterday I was driving and I was looking at license plates, and one license plate kind of jumped out to me, right? And I sat there and I looked at the license plate and I said, why is this license plate jumping out to me? So say everything comes into my mind, you know, like kind of talked about this before, and everything's say everything is equal, right? Then why did my mind pick out this license plate out of all the other license plate? Well, it has some type of important meaning to me, right? Because it jumped out. It's much more meaningful than the other ones. So what does it have to say? So even if you don't really believe in a spiritual realm or anything like that, you could talk in psychological terms, and psychologically it would mean that this license plate has something internally psychologically to tell me. So it's communicating symbolically, not the license plate itself as a physical object, but the mind and how it interacts with the images that I'm seeing and how it's represented from the license plate. That has some type of symbolic meaning to me. So in a lot of ways, it's like a language, like I kind of expressed before. And so I'm actively trying to learn the language of symbols, because it's not speaking to me in English. You know, some people hear voices, right? And they're very like clear voices that tell them things, right? And wouldn't that be nice, you know, like if symbolically my mind used language, you know, to communicate to me, but it doesn't do that for whatever reason. And so this language of images and you know, in emotions and things like that, it's very complex. But with any complex language, if you can learn it and understand it, the meaning is so much more in depth, right? And that's kind of where you've probably heard of like gnosis and things like that, where knowledge can come from kind of just an understanding, a knowing of things through experience, through symbols. And that's where gnosis comes from, is the symbolic understanding, right? I would like to think of it as a very complex language that most of us have never interacted with in consciously. Yep. And that it's a forgotten language that is essentially the building foundation of all languages and in ourselves.
Yeah.
So it's absolutely essential, I think, that people learn symbolic language. And I'm not a skilled professional at it. I'm an individual that says, hey, you know, like if you have a dream and you come to me and you ask me questions about my dream, I say, well, what does that mean to you? Because the language is actually written in such a way that it's about you. It's about your experiences, not so much mine. We can relate in some images. And that's where Jung came up with the idea of like universal images, because universally we're kind of built the same way, right? We have a pattern in our body structures and our brain structures and how we interact with reality, that certain images come out to be more impactful than others. So for instance, like the Ouroboros is a very impactful image of mine. I have like a picture on my chair about the snake eating its tail. And so it's been something that's very impactful through my entire life. And I've seen that Ouroboros come up in many different things. And also it's kind of directed me to learn different things about that image. So like Arrival.
I think one of the things that we're talking about here, and we're really, you know, we've got about 30 seconds left. What we're talking about here is, first and foremost, you know, you really bring the importance of this to the forefront. And if the first step is awareness, it's something all of us can do. I mean, what would be the odds that I'm going through boxes in my garage and I come across a box and I find some very sacred material that I had put away over a decade ago? And one of them is a rattlesnake skin. Mm. that honestly I didn't know existed. So all of a sudden now I have the symbol of that that is imprinted and it won't go away. And I think what you're saying, and especially in the book as the way you guide us through it, you know, you're asking us, one, if we become more aware, and then if we can understand the process of lucid dreaming, you know, then we move through, as you say, this is a visionary guidebook. You know, this is where you're talking about everything from dreams to lucid dreams to really stepping into the world of symbolism. And that in itself, if we stop there and then get the book and read it, there's a whole new world that opens.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.